You're listening to Icebreakers, the podcast exploring all things Canadian and Eurasian, business, culture, and personalities. The series is produced by CECC, the Canada-Eurasia Chamber of Commerce. We are a nonprofit focusing on trade, investment, and good relations between Canada and the countries of Eurasia. I'm your host, Nathan Hunt, one of the founders of CECC and former chairman of the National Board. I invite you to tune in regularly for valuable insights related to the region. Today, I am pleased to be hosting Mr. Tim Gitzel, President and Chief Executive Officer of Cameco Corporation out of Saskatoon. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Nathan. Nice to talk to you.
Yes. I'll say quickly that Tim has extensive experience in Canadian and international uranium mining, with more than 25 years of senior management and legal experience. Prior to joining Cameco, you were, I believe, Executive VP at the Mining Business Unit for Kojima out of France, which later became Areva and Orano, I believe, Dorothy told me, is the current name.
That's correct. Yep, you got it.
Tim serves as Honorary Consul of Kazakhstan to Saskatchewan and is co-chair of the Kazakhstan-Canada Business Council, a joint venture established with the support of our chamber and the Kazakhstan International Chamber of Commerce almost 10 years ago. Tim is a board member of the World Nuclear Association and the Washington-based Nuclear Energy Institute. You're a member of the Business Council of Canada and on the board of the Mosaic Company, I believe. Is that right?
That is correct.
What does the Mosaic Company do?
So that's a fertilizer business. You know, here in Saskatchewan, we've got enormous potash deposits, and Mosaic's one of the companies that mines potash here. So I'm on that board.
Got it. Well, that's near and dear to our hearts in Eurasia as well. So let's start the discussion, Tim, by telling us, can you tell us a little about yourself? I know you grew up in northern Saskatchewan. I'm told it was full of fishing and hockey. Is that accurate or not?
That's a good description, Nathan, actually. Yeah, so yeah, I'm from Saskatchewan. My father was a Mountie, a Royal Canadian Mounted Policeman. And so we lived in many communities in Saskatchewan. In those days, I'd say the late 60s and 70s, they moved people around about every 3 years to different communities. So grew up in a lot of communities in Saskatchewan, especially northern Saskatchewan. Of course, here in Canada and in Saskatchewan in particular, ice hockey is what we do. We play that. When you're growing up, you play hockey. And so we did that and played hockey and went to school. Obviously, it's 6 months of winter here, and so you've got to find activities outside. So ice fishing, snowmobiling, all of those things were part of growing up here. And I did play hockey. I think everyone, or close to everyone's dream, is to play in the professional leagues of hockey. Nobody sent me a contract, let's put it that way.
And so I heard you were waiting for a call from the Leafs, and it just didn't come.
Well, I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting,
Nathan, but any day now.
Nothing yet. Nothing yet. So in the meantime, I have to fill my time with some of these other gigs that you mentioned. So, yeah, you know what? Great. And for me to be able to, build my career around the world and then come back to Saskatoon and Saskatchewan has been a real blessing. And I'm just delighted to be back here. So
I heard you were no slouch at hockey. You were in one of the top leagues. Yeah, the junior leagues.
Yeah, in the early days, I was played a lot and really enjoyed it. And you know, you learn a lot of lessons from doing that, being involved in a team, and you know, the hard work and kind of
what
the dedication.
What position did you play, Tim?
I played center. I was a center iceman. So yeah, it was. I enjoyed every minute. I'm still playing now, Nathan. Still in the old. They call it the beer leagues now, with the buddies that I've played with for probably 30 years. And so it's become a social club now more than a hockey club, but we're still keeps us together.
Good for you. Good for you. I just got back from a ski trip with my high school buddies. So I know how winter sport can unite, can be a unifying force.
Yeah, it's important. Important to keep your friends, that's for sure.
We read in your bio that you got into mining first through a summer job at the Cluff Lake uranium mine owned by the French, I believe. And that led you down a long road that eventually led you to the chief executive chair at Cameco. Is that correct? Or what influenced your decision to go after that job? And how did the trajectory follow from that point on?
Well, it is a long story, actually. And, I kind of lucked into it. So back, this is over 40 years ago. I hate to say it, but it's over 40 years ago.
You're dating yourself, Tim.
I know that. I was trying not to do that, but it's coming out anyway. So 1979, actually, the uranium industry and the whole nuclear industry, you'll recall, was really heating up. That's when, you know, countries like the United States and Canada and Japan and the UK and France and others were building reactors, and companies were looking for fuel, for uranium to fuel those reactors. And they came to Canada, and we had the Uranium City. Facilities were going in the 50s and 60s, but then the new mines started coming on, and Clough Lake was one of them. So I applied for a summer job. I was 17. I don't think we hire kids at 17 anymore, but 17, I applied for a job and got it. And honestly, that was the start, and I really never left, not for very long. I continued to work there. I went to university. I have a law degree, but in the summer times, I'd work at either at the mine site or I was working for Cogema at the time, the French company, and they sent me to France for 2 summers, 1984, 1988, while I was in law school, and so really got the
bug. I can think of a worse place to spend the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I got the bug for nuclear, and I've really never left. I practiced law for a little while and then came right back to the business. Spent time here in Canada. I was CEO of Areva Canada for a few years, and then they moved me to Paris. And I ran the worldwide mining business unit out of Paris for about 5 years, and then got a call from Cameco to see if I'd be interested in coming back to Saskatoon. And, you know, Areva was good, very good to me, but the opportunity to come home and play on the home team, if you like, was compelling. And so we came home, and now it's, I think it's 16 years since we've come back from Paris, and I've been in the chair here at Cameco for about 12 years. So yeah, it's been a good run. Well, really good
for you.
Run.
Good for you. Speaking of, you ascended to the chief executive position, I'm going to say in 2011, and that was a tough year. Times were not good for the nuclear industry, for uranium in general during that year. What was going on then, and how did you deal with those pretty adverse conditions?
Yeah, Nathan, that's a great question because you know, we went through the 2000s. So from 2000 to 2011, probably the best 10 years in the history of the nuclear business. You know, nuclear had made a comeback sort of after the Chernobyl incident in 86. Countries looking for more power. Countries, China on the scene, building very rapidly new reactors. Many other countries building nuclear. So the need for fuel was huge. And so those years were very good years for nuclear. I got a call from Cameco in 2006, just after one of the mines flooded, a mine called Cigar Lake, which was supposed to supply a lot of the uranium for the world, flooded in Canada. And that caused a real problem for people were saying, well, we're building all this nuclear. Will we have the fuel? And prices of uranium went to sky high. But we eventually got that mine under control. We got the water out. It's running perfectly today. And so I did that from 07 to 11. And then my predecessor, a fellow named Jerry Grandy, retired from Cameco. And they asked if I would step into the job. Now, so I came there as chief operating officer just after the flood of Cigar Lake. And they made me the CEO just after the Fukushima accident, March 11th, 2011. So no stranger to adversity, I can tell you. There seems to be a black cloud hanging around when I show up. But, you know, it was a really tough period of time. We went from sky high to all of a sudden, now what? Many countries, Germany was the most obvious example, saying we're out of nuclear. We don't want to do nuclear anymore. Many countries that had plans to build turned them off. And it was really, we went through a decade of really tough times as a company and as an industry in nuclear, of people saying, boy, I don't think I like that very much. And that's not an option I want to take. And so we did what we had to do. We took some really tough medicine at Cameco. We had to reduce the size of the company. We had to reduce our operations. But I'm happy to say today, those days are gone, and we're back in vogue again with you know, the whole decarbonization, electrification, race to net zero. Greta Thunberg, people are looking at their energy options now and saying we need to have nuclear in the mix. And so happy to say our business has come back, and things are looking pretty bright going forward.
Your balance sheet ain't too shabby either, I can say.
Yeah.
So you've done some excellent work there, I believe.
Yeah, we have the last couple of years. You know, we took that tough medicine and we said we've got to hunker down, and we shut down some operations. The largest high-grade uranium mine in the world, you'd think would be the last one to shut down. We shut down because we said we can't keep doing the same thing or we'll get the same result. So we took those pounds off the market. We left them in the ground at $17 a pound was the market at the time. Today it's over 50, and so now we're restarting those facilities. And so for our shareholders, it looks like some pretty bright days ahead. And yeah, our balance sheet is as strong as we've ever had it.
Some wise decisions there. Excellent. Good moves on your part. Now I'm going to take a sidetrack. This isn't in the script, but I noticed on the website that you are. Cameco is one of the largest employers of Indigenous peoples in Canada. Is that in fact the case? I had no idea.
That is the case. And I can tell you, Nathan, that's been a very, very important part of our business for 40 years, since I started. Our uranium mines are located up in the northern half of Saskatchewan, very sparsely populated. A lot of First Nations, Indigenous communities up there. And we said, if we're going to cohabitate up here, we've got to do a good job of hiring local people, Indigenous people, looking after the environment, and hiring contractors that are Indigenous owned. And so we've really worked hard on that. And today, Cameco is the largest industrial employer of Indigenous people in Canada. We have probably over 1,000 working for us now. They're a real competitive advantage for us. We get along well. I just met yesterday with three of the Indigenous chiefs from northern Saskatchewan. I know them. I have them on speed dial on my cell phone. And so it's been important for us to involve the local community, and it's really helped our business.
And I can tell you, in the countries of Eurasia, whether you're talking about Kazakhstan or Russia or any other country, you know, dealing with Indigenous peoples is a quandary, because everybody wants the riches out of the ground, but not everybody wants to provide riches to the people who've lived there for centuries sometimes. And it's I certainly applaud your efforts in that area, because they deserve better. And it appears that Cameco is trying to deliver just that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that statement. And we've tried to be, I've always said, I think the best benefits we can provide to those communities is hope for the young children that are growing up and that are going to be there. And give them, you know, there's not a lot in some of those communities. A lot of the traditional lifestyles, the hunting and trapping and fishing, they're gone. Like, they're gone. They're not there anymore. And so there's lots of different social problems. Unemployment is rampant. So if we can provide jobs and hope and careers and training for those people, that's the best thing we can do. And it's worked out really well for us. And we've just really got a really good cooperative spirit between the communities around our operations and Cameco. So we work hard on that.
Well, I applaud you. Let's move on to Kazakhstan now. What brought you to Kazakhstan? You must have seen the Borat movie, and that intrigued you.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about that very much. I first started coming, of course, when I was in with Areva, or Arano, Kojima, as they were at the time. I think everyone started looking when they got independence in, I think it was 91. Then Western companies started looking into Kazakhstan and saying there are significant uranium reserves and resources there that the country was interested in exploiting. I think the president of the country even came to Saskatchewan for a visit. And so there was a trade-off. The resources were there, but there wasn't the capital, the people, and the expertise, if you like. And so we could provide that. We didn't have the resources, but we could. So that's where we got together, and you saw a lot of joint ventures form, the French and the Kazakhs, Canadians and the Kazakhs, there was Americans and Kazakhs, and everyone coming in with bringing, as I say, some capital and expertise and people to help get them started to the point where today we were too successful. Kazakhstan's a world leader in uranium production and just doing a great job. So the early days were tricky, just coming out. You know, the country was building and coming out from under the Soviet Union influence. It always seemed to me that there was so many similarities to Canada and Saskatchewan that we could work with the Kazakhs, and we have over the years. I've been proud to go there, proud to work in the area with the. Our joint venture is just outstanding. The one we have now, JV Inkai. Our partners are great. We've become great friends with many of the people there. We've had support from the ambassadors and Nathan and you and the different organizations you've been involved with. I think I've known you for 15 years probably or more. And so just working all together like that, the Kazakhstan's become like a second home for me. And so we're really proud to be partners with the Kazatomprom.
Yeah, Kazakhstan is a fabulous country. People that have actually been there know that it is a leader. It's a very developed. I'm trying to think of the right word, but whatever. It's a very developed society. Not just the economy, but the people are well educated. They're worldly. They have a clear idea of what they want to achieve, and I think they do a good job of achieving that. And a good example of that is what the government has done to attract foreign investment to the mining industry. You know, this may or may not affect you, your operations personally, but can you just touch on a little bit what the government, what reforms the government has adopted in the mining industry that have really helped to make the place a mecca for mining potential?
Well, first, I'd agree with your comments on how progressive of a society Kazakhstan is, and just to have seen the progress and watched it, I go there, and probably not as much as you, but I 3-4 times a year for the last 20 years more, and so to watch the progress, we started in Almaty, of course, in the old days, which was the capital and where all the business took place, and then 10 years ago or so switched over to Astana, but to see how that has changed and how the country has developed is breathtaking in some regards. On the mining front, yeah, it was a bit rustic, I would say, at the start. But like I say, both sides brought something to the table. The government recognized the value of having foreign direct investment in the country over time to help develop the assets. Their subsoil use agreements progressed to where we were very comfortable signing them. And so we have good mining operations, good ore bodies, and with clarity, our agreements run till 2045. So we know we're going to be there for a long time, and so we invest the capital and the people and the time to be there, and we invest in the relations. And I think going there as often as you can. We have an office there with obviously a Cameco presence there, but just I've been going as much as I can. I played hockey there. I've met with the presidents, we meet with all the ministers, foreign investors, council, all of the KCBC. I mean, you're involved in that. That's been a big thing for us as well. So, no, we've really become intertwined, and it's a great jurisdiction to do business.
I was kind of alluding to the reserve system, the reserve accounting system, which had been the old Soviet system, but in fact, was it 4 or 5 years ago, they moved towards adopting JORC principles, very much international principles, which are bankable, which make imminently more sense for junior miners and for people that are looking to raise money in the mining industry. With these standards, you can prove that your project really does have something that a bank or an investor would want to be involved with. Am I right?
Yeah, you are absolutely right. They use the JORC code now. And I mean, you look at a company like Kazatomprom itself, part of it's traded on the financial markets now, the world financial markets. So they have to comply with standards that exist around the world. Cameco, same thing. We trade on Toronto and New York. So all of our cards have to be face up, if you like. And so it's really, they've really modernized the system to where international investors are not afraid to invest in Kazakhstan.
Now, I'm going to ask a tough question. You've alluded to your joint venture. You've alluded to your Kazakh partner, Kazatomprom. And there was a perception 5 or 6 or was it 7 years ago when they came. I know you had a 60-40 joint venture where Cameco owned 60% and Kazatomprom owned 40. And we thought there was some pressure to change that. And you did change it. And it became 60% owned by Kazatomprom and only 40% by Cameco. Was that a bad deal for Cameco? Or how do you explain that to the shareholders?
Yeah, no, it was a good deal for Cameco. And, you have to respect where you are. You have to respect the country. And in the early days, they Because Adam Prom in Kazakhstan, as I say, needed some Western help, whether it's in the form of capital to put in the ground, expertise, technology to develop the ore bodies and people to help do it. You know, over time, they have become very self-sufficient. Obviously, the country's done quite well. Obviously, we're all struggling through the COVID years, but the mining industry has done well, where they didn't need as much support from the West. And so they came to us. Our leases, our mineral leases, were due to expire. I think they were 2023, which would be this year, and 2030 for our two mining plots. And so we would have been finished. And so we said to them, look, and they were looking to take more control of our joint venture. And we were looking to extend the lives because we want to be there for another 25 years. So we did that math. And they said, well, what if we flip it from 40-60 to 60-40? But we'll give you another 25 years of runway on your mines. We did the math. That was a good deal for us, I can tell you, and for them. And so now they operate the joint venture. I don't think in the early 90s that would have happened, but now you're seeing it. They're very competent, very capable engineers and people. They know the uranium business and they can do it. So we're very comfortable with that, that they're operating in their country, and we're happy to be a minority partner for the next, 22 years. So.
And operations have not suffered since you became a 40% partner rather than the 60% partner.
Not at all. I mean, the other piece that we got with that was we got to increase the production level. So not only did we get an extension of 25 years, we got to increase the production level. So net-net, Cameco was in the same or better position and with a very solid operator.
You're saying 40% of a bigger pie.
You got it. Yep, you got it. Perfect.
Understood. So it was a smart decision. Good for you. Let's talk a little bit about your role. You are honorary consul of the Republic of Kazakhstan in Saskatchewan, because in recognition of your long business ties with Kazakhstan. Is that a largely ceremonial role, or have you had any functions? Have you received incoming dignitaries with that role?
Yeah, well, certainly whenever there's any activity with the Kazakh people coming to Canada, I talk to obviously Akhilbek Kamaldinov, who's our a Kazakh ambassador to Canada, who's become a very close friend of mine. He's a force. He's a force in Canada. He gets around. And
I was at his event in Toronto just 10 days ago, and he gave a resounding answer to the very provocative questions I put out there on the political situation. And I was very, very impressed with his answer.
Yeah, no, he's been a real force in Canada. We love him here. He's the best salesman, if you like, for Kazakhstan you could ask for. He's come and spent time with us here in Saskatchewan with me personally, and just as I say, he's become a friend. So the position is ceremonial, but I try to help out where I can. He invites me to different functions, whether it's in Ottawa or here in Saskatchewan. We're always trying to entice our own political types to go over and visit Kazakhstan or vice versa. You had the crowd at PDAC. There, I'm sure. And so that helps. Every visit helps. Every connection helps. And so that's really how I see the role is helping make connections and convincing our Canadian cohorts that Kazakhstan's a good place and that they should go there. And vice versa, when the Kazakhs come to Canada, providing hosting services to them. So that's really what the role is.
What you just said is not unlike the function of our chamber, the Canada Eurasia Chamber of Commerce. We're making connections. We're trying to put people in touch, advertising Kazakhstan to Canada, Canada to Kazakhstan, and the same with other countries of Central Asia. So very, very interesting that you say that.
And you've done a great job. I have to say, you just continued to bring it together, and the numbers prove it out. I think the ambassador would be the best. I've heard him roll out the numbers of the foreign direct investment and the partnerships and where Kazakhstan and Canada stand with respect to each other in the world of trade. And I know Kazakhstan's become probably the leading partner in Central Asia for Canada. So those are all results of efforts by organizations like yours and the KCBC and others. So we just need to keep it going.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, you have had some pretty high-level meetings. In June, I believe you met with the president of Kazakhstan, Kasym-Jomart Tokayev. as part of a meeting of major foreign investors. Was that the Foreign Investors Council? Could you tell us a little bit about what was discussed during the meeting? What is the use of that council, and what strategies, you know, how do you use a high level meeting like that to boost connections or trade contact between Canada and Kazakhstan?
Indeed, I was at the Foreign Investors Council meeting. It was in June of last year. Then I went back again in the fall. But the Foreign Investors Council, I've been on it, I think, for about 12 years now, as long as I've been the CEO here. And it really is a unique experience in an elite group. I think it's probably 25 or 30 of the top companies doing business in Kazakhstan. And we're talking big time companies. We're talking ExxonMobil, BP, and Shell, you know, the big, big players, some of the big accounting houses, World Bank's involved. I mean, it is high level. And they, all of those companies take it seriously and send the highest level, like their CEOs that you wouldn't normally see anywhere, that show up at the Foreign Investors Council. And so, you know, they have a different theme every year. Energy was a recent theme. And so we were able to weigh in on the nuclear side. Kazakhstan's having a look at nuclear, and certainly with their expertise in uranium mining, it makes some sense. And so at certain meetings, they pick out different people to make a presentation. So I had 3 to 5 minutes, I think, to make a pitch on uranium and nuclear power, and then others would do the same. So it's at that meeting for that day, I think every minister of government is there. Every business leader from Kazakhstan is there, including the National Bank of Kazakhstan president, people like that. It is high level. So you get to really shake hands with a lot of people and get to know them. And so, you know, that what we talked about earlier, just making those contacts and connections in Kazakhstan. And so that's been a great opportunity to do that, high visibility, and feel very honored. I've met President Tokayev several times privately and just thanked him for allowing us, Cameco, to be in the country. And you know, just saying that we're at his we're available to him as a company and as a honorary consul and as the KCBC you know, through your organization as well. So it's a real honor, and you get to know them. And then once you see somebody two or three or four times, you get to know them quite well, and so they recognize you in a crowd. And that's really how the connections are made, and it facilitates business.
It does. President Tokayev has done a bang-up job, too, since taking over from Nazarbayev, I think.
Yeah, he has. I think he's doing an outstanding job. And, you know, he's had some tough issues to deal with, and he's handled them very admirably. Like I say, we're proud to do business in Kazakhstan.
Now, I gotta ask another provocative question, speaking of tough issues. You know, a little over a year ago, there was some unrest in Kazakhstan. People were wondering if it's a safe market. Is it a reliable place to put money? What would you say to those people?
Well, yeah, I mean, we were shocked. I would say we were shocked coming out of our New Year's party the night before to see the civil unrest on the streets of Kazakhstan. And that first we were saddened, I would say, and then shocked. And so we watched it unfurl. Obviously, we were concerned about the people we had in the different cities and their safety. But you know, they quickly got it under control, which was very admirable, called in some help and did what they had to do to calm things down. And then, you know, since then have, I think, gone after the perpetrators and really calmed the country down. And we're a year and, 14, 15 months out of that now. And the country's back to kind of normal operations and stability. And so, yeah, we didn't like to see it, but that didn't deter us from we've been there for 25 years. That was 1 month. And so, you know, we got through it. And again, I've been there two or three times since then and without any hesitation. So we're, you know, hopefully that they figure out what, you know, what happened and who was responsible and deal with it. And we move on.
I can tell you what impressed me about the government's response to the protesters was not that they were trying to, you know, use tear gas or suppress them, which they did not, but instead they listened to the protesters and said, what can we be doing better? I remember the government saying, you know, these people have a voice and we need to be listening to them. And I think that very fair and even response played a great role in calming tensions throughout the country afterwards, that the government really did embark on a program of reform, really did listen to what the people had to say. There were some bad apples in that crowd, and you know that as well as I do, but there were also some genuine concerns raised. And I think the government is trying to tackle that as best they can in the current very complex environment.
Yeah, and I said that to President Tokayev last time I saw him personally. I shook his hand and I said, I admire your courage, sir, and the way you stepped up to, with the world's eyes on you and your country, to manage that situation. And it's a note in the history books, an unfortunate one now, but we move forward and the country moves on.
Yeah, hear, hear. What other opportunities might there be for Canadian companies in Central Asia, in Kazakhstan? We as the Chamber are trying to promote contacts in all sectors. Maybe it's mining, maybe it's mining equipment, maybe other sectors. What other opportunities do you see for Canadian companies in Eurasia, especially in Central Asia? And what advice would you give for Canadian companies that are interested in this market?
Well, the advice would be, if you're interested, I mean, look at the Canada Eurasia Chamber of Commerce. Go there, talk to the people. They've got talented people that know the country inside out and can make the connections and give you the advice. You know, when you go into a new country, you need some help on the ground. You need people that know the country, that know the traditions, that know the people, how the structure works, a bit about the government. And so you're best to use organizations like yours, Nathan, and go there. What can we do between Canada and Kazakhstan? I think it's limitless, to be honest with you, whether it's in the mining space, and it's not just uranium. I can tell you the country is endowed with a lot of different minerals, oil and gas, of course. We're one of the world leaders in that regard. When I think of our own situation here, I think of agriculture, and I look around me here in Saskatoon, and like you go to just outside Almaty or Morristana and out into the fields and the steppes, and you're in Saskatchewan. I mean, you've got a growing season, and then you've got, you know, agriculture. They're growing crops. They're raising livestock. That's what we do here. And we've got some equipment. I know I came over probably 10 years ago to an agricultural show with a group from Saskatchewan. They were just amazed at how similar it was. And quite frankly, I think there's now some of that Saskatchewan farm equipment being used in Kazakhstan, and I know they've traded on the husbandry of different animals, things like that. And so, you know, I have a number in my head that, you know, we do kind of $7 billion worth of foreign direct investment. It could easily double or triple. We just need to keep making the connections. It's a long ways away. That's a bit of a problem. People, as you opened up with, they might have seen a movie and that's where they get their information. It's not that. It is a beautiful country with beautiful and just the potential, the leader in the Eurasian area with unlimited potential, in my view, unlimited potential. And so, yeah, I'd encourage any Canadian, American, whoever, companies, take a look at Kazakhstan. You can do business there, and it can be very, as it has to us, can be very kind to you.
Well, thank you for that assessment. We also believe that in the Chamber. And thank you for the little plug for the Chamber, by the way. Yeah, yes, we agree. If you're interested in these markets, come to us. Come to the CECC.
Absolutely.
We have the expertise, and we would love to introduce you to these markets. So thank you for the plug,
Tim. Join the CECC. I'd say join it. So then you're involved in the, you know, you get all the communication that comes out. You get to meet the people that are involved. So don't just use it, join it.
Sure. Trade missions, contacts, events, speakers. Agree. Let's talk quickly about the KCBC, the Kazakhstan-Canada Business Council. When we started that, you know, we had a similar association between Russia and Canada back in happier days. That is certainly defunct now, unfortunately. But we kind of modeled the KCBC on that, and we made it a vehicle, I think, to bring high-level decision makers, both from the private sector and the public sector, to the table. On a repeated set time frame, once a year, once every 2 years, whatever it is, to discuss the issues that matter to investors from both sides. What do you think about the KCBC to date and its prospects for the future?
Yeah, well, I think it's a great organization. You know, it started, I was going to say 5 years, probably more than that. It was 2015 or somewhere in that.
Yeah, 2015 was the first session.
Yeah, that we decided, we should be more than just a joint venture. There's a lot of Canadian companies that are either doing or looking to do business in Kazakhstan and hopefully vice versa. And, you know, it's you need the chamber. You need the chamber. That's diverse. That looks after all of the different enterprises. But we thought the Kazakh Canada business would be just a little bit tighter. So we were fortunate. The CEO of Kazatomprom at the time was willing to co-chair. I stepped up as well to co-chair. And we said, let's try it and let's see how it works. And our first meetings, we got some high-level government officials to speak to it. And we started spreading the news about how, companies can work together in each country. And it really started from there, and it's kind of blossomed. Now, the tricky part, obviously, is it's not an easy travel trip. So you have the meetings in Canada. You probably get more Canadians than you do Kazakhs. It's not cheap, and it's a big effort. And then vice versa when we go the other way. So we try to go back and forth as we can and involve as many people. And we've been making more use of this audio and video streaming now that we can connect people. So yeah, I'm a big fan of it. Obviously, I've been co-chair for about 8 years, so we keep pushing it forward and hope to keep enticing more companies and people to join us.
I can tell you the pandemic has been an unexpected boon for the KCBC because we always were twisting arms to get people to make that trip. Please, there is, potential business there. They're interesting people. Please make the trip. And you'd get, 10%, honestly, of the people that should be there, you'd get 10% to actually buy a plane ticket, travel, pay for the hotel, spend the few days in the convention hall, whatever. Now we're getting all those people involved. Instead of 10%, we're getting 80% involved. And they're involved, half of them are involved or more than half online through Zoom, through Teams, through whatever medium we have. And again, 5 or 6 years ago, did we have that technology? Sure, we did, but nobody did that. And now it's become mainstream. And isn't that nice? Because we have really had, and I can tell you, I've been involved in the KCBC from the start, as have you. The committee meetings that I have been involved in, and I've seen those from the start as well, are far more substantive today when we can have serious players around the table. Some people who maybe would love to travel, but they don't have the time or they don't have the budget, but they do have something to say. And now we can hear their voice through the miracle of modern platform communication like this.
It's been a real blessing in that regard. And so I think the combination of the video and audio meetings, which brings a whole lot more people together, is good. But when we can, so instead of going to every meeting, you go to some. Because I know, Nathan, you and I meeting face-to-face, sitting down having a coffee is always a real pleasure. And we probably chat about things that we wouldn't chat about on the video and, just make those personal connections. So both pieces together, that has been out of COVID, of which not much good came, but that was one of the things I agree that we could involve a lot more people.
Yeah, that's right. But you're right. There is no replacement for face-to-face meetings, face-to-face communication. But when that's not possible, we have this alternative, which is not quite as good, but whatever.
Yep.
Tell me this. I know you're a busy man. Tell me, what is it that made you a leader? What started your career? What is it that made you a leader from the beginning?
You know what? I don't know how to answer that question. I just did my best every day. I showed up every day, tried to do the best I could. I always stepped up when asked. If people were looking for a volunteer, I'd probably put my hand up and go out. Didn't take any shortcuts. And then when you do get into leadership positions, you respect that. And, the people I look for leaders in our company here, you look for traits like, humility and courage and motivation, but most of all, integrity, I would say. That's always driven me. I take these positions very seriously, and I know people are watching all the time, every move you make. And, it takes, like I say, it takes millions of interactions to build your integrity, and it takes one to lose it. And I never forgot that. Somebody told me that, and I've never forgot that. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just try to do my best every day, and over time, it's worked out. So I don't think I've ever applied for a job. They just kind of, you do your best, and people, you know, they just, things come along, and you take it. You take some risk. We took some risk along the way with the family, and you make some sacrifices, no question, on time, but it's worked out pretty well.
Well, I can tell you, your reputation in the industry is that of a straight shooter. You know that. People know that. So keep it up. What you're doing, I think you're absolutely right. There are many people who are good leaders, good organizers. Half of them have humility, but not all of them, maybe less than half of them, have integrity. So I agree that that has got to be a key component. That's something that makes a leader. I agree with you 100%. What does the future hold for Tim Gitzel? Where do you go from here?
Well, I'm hanging in there. It's a little long in the tooth in this chair. I think the average tenure of a CEO is maybe four years. It's 12 for me so far, but 10 of them have been pretty tricky, I have to say. We had to take some tough medicine, but I'm still here for a while. I'm still, our industry is coming back again. Nuclear is making a big comeback in this decarbonized world, and on the fuel side, of course, we didn't talk much about it, but the Russia-Ukraine piece has really changed the way people look at nuclear fuel. A lot of it was coming out of Russia, and now they're looking around for other options, and so we're providing some of those options. So yeah, lots going on here at Cameco. We just made a big acquisition of a company called Westinghouse, which is a huge nuclear fuel and actually built nuclear reactors. And so we're just finalizing that and getting that going. So Nathan, I'm going to hang in for a while yet, and just want to, you know, keep growing the industry. I work with a lot of industry organizations like yours, and provide any help I can to those. So yeah, you'll see me around for a while yet. So can't get rid of me unless the board decides that. Of course, that's not always my decision.
Unless the board decides. You said the average tenure is 4 to 5 years, and you've been in for 12. I gotta say, Tim, you're only hitting your stride. Yeah. Come on, man.
I'm just a little slower.
You got another 12 years
left. It takes me longer, Nate. That's why it took me longer than the average person to get up to speed.
So. Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Well, Tim, I will say thank you for your time today. It has been a real pleasure interacting with you, chatting with you, as it always is. I agree. I'd love to catch you for a cup of coffee, perhaps in Astana, perhaps in Saskatoon, or maybe somewhere in between. Who knows? But it's a pleasure to see that the future of Canada and Central Asia's relations is in such capable hands as yours and the other people that you have mentioned, the ambassador. Kamaldinov, Zhumagaliyev, who was with you at the start of the association, of the council, I should say. So thank you for being everything that you have been for the last 7 or 8 years with our association, for the last 12 years with Cameco, and we look forward to wishing you the very, very best in the future.
And I say the same to you, Nathan. Thank you personally for what you've done for the relations. You've been a stalwart for decades, and now through the Canada Eurasia Chamber, Chamber of Commerce leadership there, it's super important. You're there every day, plugging the relations and the business opportunities between the two countries, and we appreciate what you do, and you do a lot of the legwork. We pop in once in a while, but you and your team are there every day, and so we're grateful for that, and thank you for what you do.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. As we say, some of us have to do the legwork so that other of us can earn the money. So keep it up.
Okay, that sounds good. Fair deal.
Thank you, Tim. I was pleased to be joined today by Mr. Tim Gitzel, President and Chief Executive Officer of Cameco Corporation. We had an excellent interaction. Thank you, Tim. We look forward to our future contacts. You've been listening to Icebreakers, a podcast produced by CECC, the Canada Eurasia Chamber of Commerce, supporting trade, investment, and good relations between Canada and the nations of Eurasia. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to the show and give us a review on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. You can join our LinkedIn group to address questions to guests. To find out more about the series or to make a donation, please check out our website at www.cecccpodcast.com. Thanks for tuning in.